It's good to see you here. Appreciate your presence. We do have visitors. We're always glad to have visitors and hope that our service will be uplifting and beneficial to you. As I was thinking about this lesson and preparing this lesson, one of the things that I thought about is how many of us have been upset, maybe is a good word, or disturbed by politics or politicians sometime in the last 10, 15 years? Probably most of us, one way or the other. It doesn't matter which side you're on, we still get upset. So we don't like the way things are going a lot of times. Have you ever wondered if why these things happen, why it's like that? We're going to talk about that tonight. This morning I mentioned the fact that I'm encouraged to make practical application of the lesson, and tonight I'm going to make about as little application as I ever make in a lesson, so you're going to have to make your own. And as you do that, I'm going to guide you a little bit and tell you some things to look for. I want you to look for God taking care of His people. I want you to look for God intervening in the affairs of a nation and people's personal lives so that His will is carried out. And tonight as we look at this, we're going to look at a book that is interestingly does not even mention God. We're going to talk about the book of Esther. And very often when you bring up the book of Esther, one of the first things that people will say, even casual Bible students, is that that's the only book in the Bible that God is not mentioned anywhere. But I'm going to tell you my belief is that it may be the only book that doesn't mention God specifically, but I don't believe there is another book in the Bible that shows the working of God in the lives of His people and even in the nations, the heathen nations, to carry out His will. So we're going to look at the book of Esther this evening and just go through it, and I'll mention some things about it. The book begins with a man named Ahasuerus, who is also known as Xerxes. He is the king of Persia, and he is ruling over 127 provinces. He's got most of the known world. It's pretty much a world empire with a few exceptions that Ahasuerus is ruling over. His queen, his wife, is Vashti. And so Ahasuerus, in his early days, about the third year of his reign, he decided to have a big party and show off all that he had and brag a little bit. And so he spent 128 days inviting the nobles and the military officials to come to Susa, which was the capital city, and to see all the things that he had acquired. And at the end of the 128 days, he had a seven-day banquet. And he invited all the men that were there, the nobles of for all the provinces. He invited the military officials all for this banquet. And the interesting thing about this banquet is it says, and the only thing it really tells us about how pretty the place was. And then it tells us that he had drinks for everybody with no limit. Now, nobody was forced to drink anything, but I suspect there was a lot of drinking went on. Well, while he's giving the party for the men, his wife, Queen Vashti, is giving a party for the women. And they're having the same kind of party over there for the women in the palace that he's having in the courtyards for the men. Now, as they have this thing going on, this party going on, it says on the seventh day when his spirits were high, so we know he's getting drunk, and on the seventh day when his spirits were high, he sent his servants over to Queen Vashti and said, "Go and get her, tell her to put on her royal crown, and I want her to come and show her beauty to all of these men." And I've heard all kinds of speculation about what that involved. From exotic dancing to just coming and being there. But whatever it was, and I suspect there may be a reason why, Vashti sent word back and said, "I ain't coming." Well, now, that was unheard of. The king had never had anybody, since he had been king, tell him no. You just didn't tell the king no. In fact, very often if you told the king no, you died. But she said, "I'm not coming." So I suspect she was probably a little tipsy herself to even be able to muster the nerve to say that. But she told him, "I'm not coming." Well, this posed a real problem now. Here the queen is disobeying blatantly the orders of the king in front of all of these nobles and all these military men and in front of all of their wives. And so the king said, what can we do according to the law to make sure that something is done about this? And they began to talk about it and think about it. And what they said was that all of our wives are over there with her. And if something is not done drastic, then what that means is that when we get home, they're not going to honor us. They're not going to respect us. They're not going to be the way they ought to be as wives. And so they suggested that what you need to do is you need to depose her from being queen. And that sounded good to him, so he wrote a decree and signed it with his signet ring, which made it official law, that she would not be queen anymore and that she would never see his face again as long as she lived. Now, this is what happens in the first chapter. And you can sort of, after you read the whole book, you can go back and you can see God already working in this first chapter. And in ways that you'd never dream God was involved. But I firmly believe that these events, which lead to the next events, were the working of God in this. Well, after a while, the king's anger subsided and he sort of settled down a little bit and he began to miss his wife. He thought, man, this ain't no good. I don't like this. And so he began to sort of moan about it, and one of his servants, who was his personal assistant guy, was with him, and he said, well, I tell you what I think you ought to do. He said, you ought to have a beauty contest and get all the young, pretty women in the kingdom, and then you can just select the one you like and make her queen. Well, that sounded pretty good to him. And so he began to have his men together, all of these women from the different provinces, and if I had a guess, they had sort of pageants and runoffs and all this kind of stuff. But right there in the city of Susa, there was a girl that began to catch the eye of the servants, and her name was Esther. So at this point, we have two more people coming in. We have Esther and then her uncle who had raised her, named Mordecai. And Esther was chosen from the city of Susa, and so she was taken into the king's house, and he was, in fact, she found favor in the eyes of everybody that was involved in this contest, and they gave her a special place with the elite concubines, and they spent a year getting her ready to go in to see the king and to go before the king. And so at the end of the year, she was taken. Her time came to go in to the king. Now, Mordecai and Esther were probably descendants. Mordecai possibly was one of them, but probably not. Were descendants of some of the Jews who had been taken captive by Nebuchadnezzar from Judea way back a long time ago. So here they are, they're Jews living in this other place, and so on. Well, she went through a 12-month period of getting ready and so on. Her time came and she was told that she could choose anything from among the certain things to carry with her, and she had just listened to her advisor who said, this is all you need, and she went into the king, and it says that he immediately loved her. So he chose her to be his new wife, to be the queen. Now, again, I think you can see God at work. But it's still behind the scenes, and he's just making things fall in place and making things happen as we sit looking back. I doubt seriously at the time anybody even thought a thing about God being at work in anybody's life at this point. Mordecai was sitting at the gate of the city. And while he was sitting there at the gate of the city, he overheard two of the king's men talking about how they were going to assassinate the king. He sent word to Esther. He said, this is what they're doing, this is who it is, and this is how they plan to do it. And she told the king. The king then had it investigated. Sure enough, it was true. And so they had these men executed. Now, this was written down. This is important in the story. This was written down in the chronicles of the king. They kept a book of all the things that happened to them and around them, and it's called the Chronicles of the King, and we're going to see later that they go back and read them sometimes and just see what's in there, see what they've done, and so on. And so, as we look at this, we see God at work carrying out his plan to save the Jewish people from destruction, even though there wasn't a Jew there that was threatened or felt threatened at this time. But God is working so far ahead to make sure that everything happened exactly like He wanted it to happen. Now we get a new character, chapter 3. It's a man named Haman. Haman was promoted by the king to second in command of the whole kingdom. The command was given that everyone should bow down before Haman. He'd ride his horse and everybody's supposed to bow down to him. And very quickly he noticed that when he would go in and out the city gate that Mordecai would be sitting there, and Mordecai never did bow down. Never would pay him any homage. He never did showed him any respect at all. And this just really enraged Haman. And he began at that point to try to plot to how he could kill Mordecai. And then he found out he was a Jew, and so he said, well, we'll just get rid of all the Jews. He didn't like any of them anyway. And so he decided that he was going to have all of the Jews killed. So Haman went in to Ahasuerus the king, and he told him, he said, look, you've got this group of people living in your kingdom. They got their own laws. They don't obey your laws. They don't follow your customs. They're a threat to us. We need to get rid of them. If it's okay with you, I'm going to issue a decree and we're going to annihilate them. King said, that's fine with me. Gave him Haman his signet ring, said, just make the law, sign it, and send it. And so he said, okay. So he issued a decree that in the 12th month, on the 13th day of the month, that all of the Jews in the kingdom were to be slaughtered. Every one of them. Well, you can imagine how this affected Mordecai. He's got this decree from the king with the king's command on it that all the Jews are going to be exterminated. And so in chapter 4 we see that when this decree went out, there was a lot of wailing and mourning, and there was they tore their clothes and they put on sackcloth, and Haman was sitting in the city gate with sackcloth on. Well, word got back to Esther that Haman's out here mourning about something. He's wearing sackcloth. Something's wrong. And so Esther sent one of her servants out and said, go talk to Mordecai and find out what's wrong. And so Mordecai told the messenger exactly what was going on and gave him a decree, a copy of the decree, to carry back to Esther so that she could see exactly what was happening. He also sent word to Esther that you need to go into the king and you need to try to talk to him and get something done about it. Well, Esther read the decree. She heard what was going on. But then she sent word back to Mordecai. And she said to Mordecai, she said, I can't do that. Because everybody knows if you go into the king and he does not extend his scepter to you to come in, that you can be executed. You don't go uninvited to see the king. And so we see a statement that is made, and I'm going to read this passage. I'm not going to read but a couple tonight, but I want to read in Esther chapter 4 and verses 12 through 14. And this is the response that Mordecai sends back to Esther. When Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer. Do not think that because you're in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. But you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to royal position for such a time as this. You don't see God mentioned there, do you? But Mordecai is saying in every way, God's going to take care of His people. God is going to protect us. And if you don't accept the responsibility to do your job, because God has put you where He has, somebody else will do it. And I think we see in this not only God at work, but we also see the faith of Mordecai. He was determined to trust in God, even though it does not mention God at all. On the third day, chapter 5, she put on her royal robes. She went into the court outside of where the king was sitting. And he looked out and he saw her. And he extended his royal golden scepter for her to come in. She came in and she touched the end of the scepter, which was the custom of the day. The king asked her, said, "What is your request?" "Up to half of the kingdom, whatever you want, I'm going to give it to you." And she said, "My only request at this time is that I can give a banquet and that you and Haman will come to eat with me. The king very quickly said, "Sure, we'll do that." And he said, and she said, "I'll tell you what it's all about when we eat dinner." So sure enough, they planned the banquet and he invited Haman to come, and that invite was like a military invite. When one of the officers invites somebody under them to come to a function, you go. I mean, it's not a question. It's not something you can turn down. You just do it. And so king invited Haman. That means he ordered Haman to come is what it means. Boy, Haman went home happy. Now here he is, second in command of the whole kingdom, and the queen is giving a party, a dinner party. She only invited two people, the king and him. And so you can imagine how proud he is with all of this. But on his way home, he went outside the gate, and when he did, Mordecai would not bow down to him. So he went home with really mixed feelings of being so happy because he had been invited, but just as mad as a hornet because Mordecai would not bow down to him. Well, his wife said, "Well, I got an idea." Said, "Why don't you build a 50-foot gallows so everybody can see what's going on and hang Mordecai? You got the authority to do that if you want to do it. So just do it." And so Haman agreed and he ordered that the gallows be built. And so they were immediately constructed. Now, if you were anybody among the Jews involved in this, or if you were Haman or the king, would you imagine that somewhere behind all the scenes, God's at work? You see, I think there's a lesson there for us too, because a lot of times we think God doesn't know. God's not watching. God doesn't care. God's not doing anything. But he's just as busy at work as he can possibly be, and he's directing the affairs of this one and that one and something else, and then it all comes together to carry out his plan. And that's exactly what we see here in the book of Esther. And the Westerns, they say, "Meanwhile back at the ranch." We're going to say, "Meanwhile back at the palace." The king couldn't sleep that night. He was restless and he couldn't sleep. I mentioned the Chronicles of the Kings, so he ordered his servant to bring the Chronicles of the Kings and read to him. "Just read to me about what's written in the Chronicles of the Kings." And he wanted to hear about himself is what he did. And so he began reading to him, and one of the stories that he read that was written down was how that Mordecai had stopped that assassination and had saved his life. And he looked at the servant immediately and he said, "What was done for Mordecai?" And he said, "My Lord, nothing has been done for him." Well, about that time, Haman came into the courtyard outside where he was. And he called Haman and said, "Come on in here, I got something for you." So Haman went in and the king asked Haman, he said, What can the king do for somebody that he's really pleased with and really happy with to honor him and to show him how much he appreciates it?" Well, Haman began to think, as he would, he began to think, "Well, nobody's appreciated more in the kingdom than me. And after all, if the king's going to honor somebody, it's going to be me." So he said, "I tell you what you ought to do, O king." He said, "You ought to get a robe that the king has worn and get a horse that the king has ridden on and put the royal crest on the horse and have one of your nobles to lead the person that you want to honor through the streets. And as you lead them through this, as that person leads them through the streets, he is to shout out to everybody around, 'This is what is done for the man the king delights to honor.'" The king said, "That sounds good. You go get it all together and take Mordecai, put him on the horse and take him through the town." You can imagine how Haman must have felt. Here's this guy that he was coming in to the king to ask permission to hang him is what he was there for. So he's there to ask permission to hang him, and the king says, you take him, put him on the royal horse, and lead him through, and you proclaim that this is how the king treats somebody that he wants to honor. Well, Mordecai did this, and you can imagine how he felt. So when he got through, he rushed home, and he told his wife and his friends that were there all that had happened. And in Esther 6, in the last part of 13, verse 13 and verse 14, it says, his advisors and his wife Zeresh said to him, since Mordecai, before whom your downfall has started, is of Jewish origin, you cannot stand against him, you will surely come to ruin. You see, they understood that God protected the Jews. And they realized that there's a God that's behind all this. They didn't know how, they didn't know what, but even his wife understood that God was working in all of this. And while he was still talking with her, the king's eunuchs came in and hurriedly arrived, it says, and hurried Haman away to the banquet that Esther had prepared. Now, we have the second banquet of the king. I sort of skipped over the first one because all it did in the first one is said, let's have a second one and I'll tell you tomorrow night. And so he said, okay. So now the second one, Esther and Haman were present with the king, and the king once again asked the request of Esther and said, okay, what is your request? I'll give you anything up to half of the kingdom. She said, I'm asking for my life and the life of my people. And, O king, if we were being sold into slavery, I wouldn't even bother you. But we are destined to be put to death. And the king immediately said, who is doing this? And she turned and she said, this wicked man, Haman. That made the king mad. I mean, really mad. He jumped up. He went outside into the garden and began to walk around to try to cool off a little bit and not do something rash. Meanwhile, Haman came over to where Esther was reclined on the couch, and it says that he fell on the couch with her and was pleading for his life. And about that time, the king settled down enough to come in, and when he walked in and saw Haman on the couch laying there with Esther, he said, it's bad enough that you would try to kill all of the people, but are you trying to molest my wife in the king's palace? And immediately the servants that were there covered his face. And one of them told the king, said, Mordecai, Haman has built gallows 50 feet tall to hang Mordecai. The king said, you take him and hang him on his own gallows. And so Haman was hung, and he died. Mordecai was promoted to Haman's position. And so he and Esther began immediately to try to do something to save the Jews. You see, there was a problem. Under Persian law, if the king or his men made a law and it was sealed with his signet ring, that law could not be changed. And if you'll remember the story of Daniel, and those men got the king to say that if somebody worships anybody other than you for so many days that they'll be thrown in the lion's den. And he didn't want to do it after Daniel was brought in, you remember? He tried to get out of it, but he had signed it with his signet ring, and the law could not be changed. Again, God saved Daniel. But here, this law couldn't be changed, and so the king said, he talked to the king about it. The king said, you do whatever you can, you just can't change the law. And so what they did is they issued a decree to all of the Jews that the king is giving you permission on the 12th month, the 13th day, that you fight back and you have permission to kill anybody in the kingdom that is an enemy of the Jews. So sure enough, the day came. And when the day came, they did fight back. And I believe it was somewhere over 75,000 of the people that were enemies of the Jews that were put to death. What we see in the story, and Haman then ruled for, I mean, Mordecai ruled for quite some time. And I think what we see in this story, as I've mentioned already, is we see God at work. And I guess really the only practical application I want us to take from this for ourselves tonight is that even though we don't see God at work, and even though we don't understand how God is doing what He's doing or why He allows things to happen the way He happens, and it doesn't matter whether it's in our community, in our job, or if it's the politics of the land or some other national leader, none of that really matters. God is in control. And there has not, this is going to be hard to swallow, but there is not a single congressman in Washington, D.C. that God did not have His hand in putting him there. There has not been a president of the United States that God did not have His hand in putting him there. And I'll be the first to admit some of them I don't understand why. There's some of them that I just don't see why in the world God would have let them get elected, both congressmen and presidents, or congresswomen, both. But the fact is, I believe that God is doing it. Now, from a practical standpoint, that means that you and I need to be careful what we say about these people. We need to be careful of our attitude toward them. And no matter how much we might disagree with their policies, we might disagree with what they stand for, we need to show them respect as government officials because God is the one who put them there. And then we need to pray for them so that God will lead in the right way. We need to pray for our nation so that God will lead us in the right way. He knows what's best, and He'll give us what's best. And we don't have to understand how or why for it to happen. Tonight, if you're here and you're not a Christian, we've not talked at all about becoming a Christian, but, you know, one of the things we do need to understand is that it's God's people that He takes care of. You go back to the Old Testament and study it, what you'll find very quickly is that God over and over and over and over again says, if you'll follow Me, if you'll serve Me, I will protect you, I will be with you, I will bless you, I will take care of you. But if you don't, then you're going have the curses brought on you, and your life's going to be filled with problems. And so tonight, if you're not a Christian, you need to come to God in Jesus Christ so that you can have your sins forgiven, you can be a child of God, and you can have the blessings of God and the protection of God in your life. If you're here tonight and you're subject to His invitation, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.